Welcome to the What a Job podcast, where we delve into the inspiring world of women in operations. In each episode, we sit down with incredible women who are forging a successful career as the driving force behind some of the largest companies and projects in Australia. Learn about the jobs they do, the career paths they have taken, and their passion for operations. Get ready to be motivated by the journeys, challenges, and triumphs of these remarkable women. For more information on this or any other episode, visit www.nawo.org.au.
Respect for diversity, equity, inclusion and belonging is core to Nawo's purpose. And Nawo holds deep respect for the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander heritage, culture, strength, resilience and spiritual connection to the land on which we gather to connect, learn and share. We acknowledge the traditional custodians of all the First Nations of this land, and we pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging. This podcast is recorded on Wurundjeri land and produced on Darug land.
Today, we have Madeline Savage with us. Madeline works for a company called OG, and she's going to tell us a bit about them in a minute. Madeline is a demand and supply manager, and she works to develop long-term supply planning processes across two manufacturing sites and two regional depots. Is that right, Madeline?
Yes.
Now, it's an interesting space, the fibre space, and we're going to learn all about that today. But I also wanted to point out that Madeline didn't start off life wanting to be in supply chain. I don't think she did an international business internship with the Victorian government, the start of her career, and she's got a bachelor's degree in commerce and international studies, and then she's now studying a master's of supply chain and innovation while she does her busy full-time job. So that's a pretty enormous effort. Madeline, thank you for joining us today.
All right, so my name's Maddie. I'm the Demand and Supply Planning Manager at OG. So OG Fibre Solutions, it's a multinational company based in Japan, but we have sites all across the world, including New Zealand and Australia. We're primarily a paper producer, but the sites in Australia focus on making cardboard boxes from the paper that our mills make. So OG has sites in Victoria, New South Wales and Queensland, but we have multiple sites in Victoria.
And Maddie, how many people does OG employ, roughly?
That is a good question. I'm going to say around 180 for Australia.
Yep.
So on my site, like the factory floor has about, I think it's about 60. We are a two-shift operation in the plant. And then our sister site in Dandenong, that's probably another 20 people. They're just a one-shift operation. They have maybe 15 different machines that they run with a crew that they move around. But here at the site that I'm based at, Noble Park, we have 5 machines that run every day, 2 shifts. And we have a big team of support people that assist with the factory, you know, credit departments, commercial, customer service, sales teams, et cetera.
All those wonderful support team functions.
Yes.
So what kind of shifts are you running? Are they 24/7?
So it's just 2 shifts, so it's 16 hours.
16-hour shifts, okay.
Yeah.
Not big shifts,
we get 16 hours a day.
Yeah. Brilliant. Now, Maddie, if you were describing your job to your grandparents, how would you describe it?
So I think my grandparents are really proud that I work in manufacturing. When I first entered the industry, my grandfather in particular was really surprised because he doesn't think that there's any manufacturing left in Australia. So he was really happy. And I kind of explain it that I look after all the paper, which is the biggest input, I guess, into the cardboard. All our paper comes from our own mills in New Zealand, so coordinate all the ordering of that. And to order all the paper, you need to understand what you're going to make and what you're going to sell. I think the biggest challenge and how I describe it, especially to my grandparents, is in our industry, the common lead time is 5 days. If a customer calls up and they want a box, they're expecting it within 5 days. And that's all the players in the industry trying to adhere to that 5 days. But paper lead times are closer to 8 to 12 weeks, depending on the type of paper. So there's a big mismatch between what a customer expects and you having your raw materials. So I always say that's the challenge, and that's what gives me my role.
Yeah, that's the biggest challenge. Right. So does that mean a lot of inventory of paper that has to be managed? Or how do you do that?
We do manage a lot of inventory of the raw materials and some in the finished goods. Paper comes in all different thicknesses and widths and even colours, white and brown and different inputs. You can have recycled or you can have paper that is craft. OG specialises in high-quality craft papers, so that's our niche in the market. So it's not as just simple as just ordering a lot of paper. There's probably maybe 112 SKUs that we look after of raw materials, and it's all got to be ordered and coordinated with our mill schedule. So the mill has the same, you know, function that I do for the box plant, where they're trying to manage their own plant capacity and make what we need. But it's always changing. It's very dynamic.
And are you directly linked to your systems to the mill and to the...
Yes. Yeah, we're vertically integrated.
Yeah. Fantastic. Can you just do one more visual for me? Does the paper come in on enormous big reams or coils? Like,
yeah, so they come in reels. So they weigh between 2 and 2.8 ton. So we have special forklifts that have attachments, which we call grabs, but they're basically a big clamp. So the paper gets loaded in a container in New Zealand. It gets put on a boat. It gets destuffed in Melbourne Port or in New South Wales or Queensland, depending on which plant it's being delivered to. We are partnered with someone at the port. They obviously have to have these special forklifts as well, and they take them off and then they get delivered out to our site by truck, because when the mill makes a product, they make containers and containers of the same product. But we may use, you know, 30 different products in a day. So we actually every day for the next day build, we get 5 trucks a day into site, and each reel has to be individually picked what's going to come in depending on what the plan is. So we try to run a just-in-time process where what we need for tomorrow we're calling in the morning, so that we're holding just the right amount.
Yeah, I certainly get the gist of the challenge associated with your job, Maddie.
Yeah.
And that's a fantastic description of it and a terrific description. You know, I've got a really visual picture of what it is to work there at OG. So tell us, what was your path to this job? And I have alluded to it a little bit. I just wanted to throw it in there that I don't think you kind of finished year 12 and went, I'm going to be a demand and supply manager.
No, not at all. So I really didn't know what I wanted to do up until about year 10, and then I decided that I really wanted to be a diplomat. So I geared all my studies towards being a diplomat, because I enjoy mediating. I enjoy having two parties that don't get along, trying to find a creative solution and, you know, getting a result. So I entered university to do international studies, but I thought as a backup, I'm going to do business just in case. I did economics there, which I really, really loved and found it really enjoyable. And then when I finished uni, I did apply for a few roles in government and was unsuccessful. And then I applied for a role at Aurora, which was a supply chain graduate program. It's a very similar skill set. You're trying to find solutions. You've got to have computer skills, and there was some overlap. And when I got accepted, I was really excited. And after a few weeks, I even remember telling my mum, like, this was the best thing that's happened, and I'm glad that I didn't go down the government path, because this is where I'm supposed to be. Because it's very similar. When you work in supply chain, you're trying to find solutions that suit all departments and functions. So it's the same as what I enjoyed doing, and I thought I wanted to do that between more, you know, more the government side. However, yeah, it's very similar in the supply chain role. Like, your job is to put all the pieces together and make sure all the functions, you know, are gelling from operations and sales, and I really enjoy that. It's rewarding.
Oh, well, that sounds brilliant. I mean, the problem solving, the communication skills, I can imagine – you know, diplomacy requires exceptional communication, and you're obviously bringing that into the role. And I love that you can kind of recognize that it's not too dissimilar from where you wanted to land originally. Really interesting.
Well, it's very fast paced as well, which I think I may not have got if I had have gone down the different paths. And like one of the most exciting things is when you have two different problems, people coming to you with issues, and if you can find a solution that solves both those at the same time, like I think, oh yeah, job's done. That's the best kind of day for me, is when you can solve multiple problems with the same solution. It doesn't always happen, but when it does, it's a good feeling.
Absolutely. So we've heard a bit about the challenges in your job. What strength do you bring to the table that helps you overcome those? I mean, we can hear that there's the technical, logistical challenges. We hear that in sort of key stakeholder management and, you know, bringing parties to the table over solutions, that's part of the challenging. What do you think it is in what you bring to the job that makes a difference?
I think attitude. You've got to think that there can be a solution that can be found. And so I think, especially moving from Aurora to OG, there were skills that I thought I had that I didn't. But being open to your stakeholders and the people that you work with, I'm not sure how to do this, but I want to have a crack, or show me how, and listening, like not, don't just ask people for help and then take it for granted when they spend their time with you. But I think if you walk into different scenarios or your day-to-day with a really positive attitude and thinking, we will get through this, we're going to find the best way to do this for the business, like we're going to find a solution, it just makes everything easier, and people are more inclined to work with you. And when people want to work with you, then you can solve anything.
Absolutely. So the relationship building piece sounds like it's pretty big.
It is, and I think it's important. It's important in all roles, but I find it's particularly important in supply chain, because you are trying to match up many pieces together. Like the chain doesn't work unless every little bit does its piece. And so you can't just have really good relationships with the end piece and think that the back pieces are going to flow. So unless you build relationships across the business, across the different departments, you're going to come undone somewhere, and you're not going to achieve objectives for the business or yourself. Or, you know, me and my team. So, again, that isn't something that you learn at uni. It's not a hard skill. It's a soft skill, and it's definitely something that I've had to work on over time. And you do get better at it, but it does take a bit of awareness and reflection. If you go through something that didn't kind of turn out the way that you thought it would, you need to review and think, how could I have done this better, or what went wrong, and make sure that you learn. Or else you're just going to be stuck.
It's great to make mistakes, but not make the same ones over and over.
Exactly.
Yeah. So with your Masters of Supply Chain, what gaps do you feel that is filling for you? So I'm really interested to know what's that assisting with?
So I've been really fortunate both at OG and Aurora to be partnered up with different subject matter experts in all different parts of supply chain. However, a lot of people in our industry are very specialized in corrugated. And because I haven't worked in another industry other than a few, you know, smaller short-term jobs, I felt that I needed to know more about the field, because maybe there were things that we could bring in from other industries that would suit us. And if you're not getting exposed to that, So part of it was technical skills that I wasn't going to learn because they were, you know, relevant to other industries but not our own. And just, yeah, it keeps me busy. So I enjoy learning and trying new things. So
part of the equation at OG as well, right?
Yes.
Kind of describe to us an average day in the life of a demand and supply chain manager.
So I start quite early, around 6:30, which is the same time as the first shift starts. I get in and I look at what happened the day before, like all the machine stats. I look at the inventory that's on site to see if we're going to meet the deliveries for the day. So the first half of my day is really looking at the short term. How did yesterday go, and how are we set up for today and tomorrow? Then there's a few reports that I generate for different team members that cover off those things with graphical presentations, so that we've all got a snapshot of where we are. Then at around 9 o'clock, we have our production meeting, which is the most important meeting for me. It's where all the stakeholders are in the same room. You don't often get that. everyone's all very busy. You don't always get the maintenance manager, the supervisors, site manager, quality all together. So that, I think, is a really good way to kind of all be on the same page. You hit refresh from the day before, you're all up to date. And then after that, my day is a little bit more diverse. It will change from day to day, but I spend a lot of time on the phone talking to, say, sales, getting updated forecasts, working with the production planner to do paper ordering and just monitoring different stock builds that we do throughout the year. So that's where I spend more time on the strategy stuff and longer term, and the morning is more for the transactional.
Yeah, I was going to say, so if you were sort of to tell us the proportion of your day that was on operational kind of reactive responsiveness, and then what portion of your day is more on the forward looking, you know, longer horizon work, what kind of proportions are we talking?
It's probably about half and half. So I find in the morning, that's when I'm the most productive. That's when I get the most work done. It's when I can think the clearest. And so even though I dedicate that time to, I guess, some of my reports and checking on things and correcting things, still an opportunity between 6:30 and 9 o'clock to fix things that could go wrong later in the day. And you can't miss that opportunity. But I find when I'm in that kind of zone fixing those things, that it's in the back of my mind, I'm thinking of the strategy piece that I'll be doing later. I'll be like, oh, yeah, this is going to align with this. So I would say about half an hour.
And you get your 20,000 steps up a day?
Well, we aren't allowed to wear jewellery in the factory, so you can't wear your watch. Oh. So I know I get my steps because I walk around, but my watch is not counting them.
That's a shame. You could be getting great, you know.
Yeah, I know. So I'm going to say that yes, but the data doesn't back that up.
What kind of hours do you work on an average week? What are we looking at here?
About 6:30 to 4.
Okay.
Every day.
So you get out of there at a reasonable time.
Yeah, reasonably early. I make sure that the afternoon shift, I guess, is kind of all set up. Afternoon shift doesn't start till 3, so they might come in and have questions or, you know, give information about the week's plan. But, yeah, around 4.
And how much flexibility do you have in your work, given that you're trying to communicate with the shifts? How do you manage that if you do need any kind of flexible, you know, flex in your
work? I've got two other people on my team. So I've got the production planner and I've got regional materials coordinator who's based in Mildura. So I've got a really strong team that if I need to not be around, they can both cover most of the things that I do. If it's attending a meeting or, you know, preparing a report, they're cross-trained. I can say, oh, especially if I have to go visit a customer, not necessarily for personal flexibility, if I have to go off-site to visit a customer, I can say, I won't be there for this meeting, can you run it? So we're very integrated in that way. So that's a plus. And OG's been really supportive of me doing my master's. That's required some time off. Yeah. So, yeah, I just get my work done the day before or set up the team and delegate, you know, put it in the best shape possible and just say, this needs to be monitored, I won't be here. Yeah. But the phone, again, is always ringing.
Yeah, but the communication lines are open with your team, it sounds like, if you do need
yes.
to be able to flex around things and still manage what needs to be done with the shifts at the right time.
Yeah, and I think with OG in particular, because we are, I guess, a smaller team, and I mean like all the managers, we're very open to helping each other. You know, if someone's not going to attend and you've got, you know, an understanding of the problem or what's going on, it's not a big deal to say, I won't be there. Can you just step in because I have, you know, something else? So that's a really good thing.
Yeah, fantastic. Teamwork makes the dream work, as I always
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. So what would you, if you were, explaining to somebody what was the most rewarding part of your job, how would you sort of sum that up?
So I really like process improvement. So when someone comes to you and says, oh, this is really slow or this is like the worst part of my day, for example, you know, or every time we do this, it falls over. Sitting with that person or other people in the team to come up with a new solution that makes their job easier, I find that rewarding. And I think that's a big part of the role of a manager is to make your team's job easier.
That is so cool. I can relate to that. I'm sure many of the audience can relate to that process improvement and making everybody feel better about their jobs as well, and about what the output is at the end of the day and how efficiently and effectively you're doing that.
Yeah.
Fantastic, Maddie. Now, and you're still very young, so I feel like this question is a little odd, but if you were advising your younger self, would there be anything that you would do differently? What would you say? Hey, Maddie, just think about this before you do this.
Just always put your hand up for opportunities. I think that's a big thing, which I feel like I have done, but I know there's some that I didn't fight hard enough for the opportunity.
Okay.
And I think if you make any mistakes, just own it. You'll earn a lot more respect by putting your hand up and saying this is going to be wrong or that mistake has happened than if you try and hide it. And I think if you're really understanding that you made an error, trying to find the solution before just putting it on someone's desk saying this is all wrong and it's my fault, you know, being committed to finding a solution to any errors, you know, but definitely owning it. People will respect you more.
And it's not easy to do, is it?
No, it's hard.
Hard.
But you need to do it.
You do need to do it, and it helps if you've got a really supportive workplace to be able to own up fast and get over the mistakes quickly. And as we said earlier on, you know, hopefully not repeat the same mistake twice is key. So I think that's great advice and terrific advice for people listening who are earlier in their career. What are your thoughts on how we encourage more youth and women into jobs like yours?
I don't know. Like when I was at uni, or even now, it's still such, especially in corrugated, it's just an unknown industry. Like when I got my first job at Aurora, I had never before thought, where does a box come from? You know, and I'd just come out of 4 years of studying business and that thought had never crossed my mind. Like where, you know, so I think especially this industry, we're at a really unique opportunity where because of all the environmental concerns, like this is corrugated's time, you know, we're offering a plastic-free solution and more ethical consumerism. So we should be attractive to the youth that are more inclined to care about the environment than maybe other generations. Like they're a lot more aware. The internet's telling us how, you know, everything that's happening to the environment. And we are a really good solution, but I don't actually know how we harness that more effectively.
Well, I'll tell you what, Maddie, I think you've just come up with the new recruitment line for OG. I think that's awesome. And I think that that's really great insight for all of us when we're talking about the kind of jobs available in operations. What skills do you think universities can start incorporating into study to provide opportunities in Australian manufacturing industry?
Just more hands-on units. So currently my master's, I'm doing a lot more, like I've just done Lean Six Sigma through university, and that's not offered in undergrads. It's only offered in the master's. But I think if you had have done a lean manufacturing unit in your bachelor, manufacturing wouldn't seem so strange, because there are a lot of skills that you need to know, and understanding an assembly line and this and capacity and all these things. Once you've learnt it, it actually seems kind of obvious, because it's, you know, don't do too many of these because it won't fit in the warehouse. You know, it is relatively straightforward from a higher level, but I don't think those kind of units are offered in the earlier years. And so for me, when I've only just completed it, it's a refresher because I've done it before because my work has organized it. So it's more just exposure to the different processes and even quality assurance, like just learning about all the different accreditations that are out there, right? Which is not just relative to manufacturing of boxes, but food manufacturing, which is quite big in Australia. Like there are different things that we are, you know, that we have our strengths in, but you don't really learn about all the strict, you know, guidelines on that.
I'm with you. I think they've got to get far less academic and far more practical in terms of what they're doing to upskill our talent. That rounds off our brilliant discussion with Maddie Savage, Demand and Supply Manager. What a job, Maddie. Good on you. And thanks for joining us, Maddie. I hope you enjoyed that.
Thank you.
The What a Job podcast is brought to you by NAWO, the National Association of Women in Operations. To find resources to help you build your career in operations, or to find out how Nawo can support your organization in achieving gender balance in operations, visit www.nawo.org.au.